First, it's been over a week since protests started in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and around the country to demonstrate against the killing of George Floyd and other unarmed people of color by police. A number of those protests began peacefully, and many remained that way. There were also incidents of looting and attacks on protesters by police departments. As more of these protests followed the pattern, President Trump had this to say earlier this week.
I have strongly recommended to every governor to deploy the National Guard in sufficient numbers that we dominate the streets. Mayors and governors must establish an overwhelming law enforcement presence until the violence has been quelled. If a city or state refuses to take the actions that are necessary to defend the life and property of their residents, then I will deploy the United States military and quickly solve the problem for them.
Our next guest joins us now to talk about the protests and the prospect of military intervention. Salika Duxworth-Lawton is a professor of history at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. She's also vice president of the group Uniting Bridges. Salika, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me here.
Before we dig into some particular issues, just as someone who studies, among other things, social movements and African-American history, I wanted to get your big picture thoughts on what we've seen over the last week.
Well, we've seen two things, and I think that people have to separate the two overlapping things. We have seen a nonviolent uprising against police brutality on the part of the protesters that is multiracial and multisexuality. But we have also seen a regulation, which is a kind of attack by white supremacist accelerants and infiltrators on Black, brown, and queer businesses. We've seen this weaponization of social media where white supremacists have tried to get white people to be angry and have them attack multicultural people. And I'm happy to say that in most cases that has not happened. It's almost like we saw white supremacist Tet, like 1968, where they rose up because they thought all white people agreed with them and nobody came. So it's interesting on two parts. And I think that the attack on the journalists, which is unprecedented, has forced journalists to move out of their narrative frame, which is always to conflate the looters with the protesters, and to begin to actually see the separation and to recognize the brutality that the community has always seen.
You have floated the idea on social media of kind of a protest marshal to help really make the difference between the protesters and the looters very clear, among other things. Can you talk about that concept and how you hope at least it might work?
Well, what we want are people who are trained in nonviolence and they're also trained in de-escalation, and for them to stand between the counter-protesters and the protesters. These are people who aren't going to react, and by their discipline, they will make it very clear who is misbehaving. Very much like what we saw in the 1960s, although we're probably going to call them ushers and not marshals, because what we want them to do to be escorts, we want them to model the discipline of nonviolence, and we want to open up the space for our younger people. It's a lot to ask our younger people to have to stand there and be called the N-word and be called all these insults and et cetera. So the ushers are going to be the ones, and especially the white ushers, to face the counter protesters and to say, no, we don't agree with you. And the idea of a line of multicultural, multi-race, multisexuality ushers undermines the white supremacist argument that all white people hate people of color. And that's not true. It's not true at all. So we want to undermine that argument by showing the people who want to protect the community, if that makes sense.
A lot of the media attention has focused on what's going on in bigger cities around the country. Can you give us a firsthand view of what's been happening over the last week in the Eau Claire area?
Well, we are 90 miles from Minneapolis, as you can imagine. We have had a lot of social media tomfoolery, is what I would put it. Hacking people's Facebooks to put fake posts on, masquerading as if they were an official organization. So there was a post claiming to be from an Eau Claire area response team, and there is no such organization. So a lot of it has been rumor mongering and trying to provoke misbehavior. We in Eau Claire have organized to send supplies up to Minneapolis to the places that have been burned. And I'd say shout out to Serena Wagner, Jack, to Jake Lindell, and Jalen Cart, and Jalen, oh, I just lost her last name, because they've been the main ones, or Jalen Carson, they've been the main ones organizing this. So a lot of what we've been doing, there's a lot of ties between Eau Claire and Minneapolis. We've been seeing the raw footage. We've been talking to people and checking up on people. And there are some people, Jake Lindgren is who I was thinking of. And you can contact them if you're in the Eau Claire area, or take supplies to the Lismore, by the way, starting tonight at 6 o'clock. We've been trying to support people in Minneapolis who have been hurt by what has happened. And we have been hurt. Many of the people who live in Eau Claire work in Minneapolis. They come back and forth. And of course, we've been rocked because they have last week, there was an incident where three young white boys were caught by AIM in Minneapolis looting a liquor store. At first, it was reported they were from Eau Claire. They said they were from Eau Claire. Now there are reports that they're actually from St. Croix or from Hammond. But it really forced Eau Claire to take a look at ourselves and where we sit. And I think that the city has risen to do good. The majority of people here, no matter what their race are, is good.
We're talking to Salika Duxworth-Lawton, professor of history at UW-Eau Claire, getting her perspective on the protests of the last week. Now, we heard President Trump there floating that idea of sending active duty military forces into cities to maintain order. He says, as a activist yourself, but also a historian who focuses on things like military history, what are your thoughts on that idea?
Well, the first is that the Army doesn't want to do it. they have seen that duty in Iraq and Afghanistan, and to be honest, they really would prefer not to do it here. And given that surge strategy is to work with the community to protect itself, I'm not exactly sure what he thinks he's going to accomplish. But the second thought I have is that the Insurrection Act has never been tested at the Supreme Court level for a president ordering in troops on his own authority. Troops have always been brought in at the governor's request. So this will set up a Supreme Court fight that will, by the time the fight is dealt with, the entire crisis may be over.
And I understand you coordinate a Juneteenth celebration every year. That would just, I think, be 2 weeks from today. How will this one feel amidst everything that's going on?
Juneteenth this year will be virtual, and the younger people, high school and college students, are working with me to coordinate it. And I think it will be a time for our community to come together and to decide that for us, what will equality look like? Freedom for people of my race, I am Black, looks like equal treatment and equality. Freedom, evidently, for some people is getting a haircut. I think we need to have a strong community response and discussion about what freedom looks like and how we can make liberty and justice for all real. And what does that look like in real life?
Salika, thanks a lot for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Salika Duxworth-Lawton, professor of history at UW-Eau Claire. She's also vice president of the group Uniting Bridges. She joined us today to talk about ongoing protests against police violence in Wisconsin and around the country.